Forest Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is the mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. Let's take a peek here and see what's going on this planet. Go over some news events. See what's good and what's bad and who's naughty and who's nice. Times Live. TimesLive.co.za. That's African online newspaper. Malema Dare Zuma. Youth League leader says even Mbeki never berated him in public. What's happened is there's been a split in the ANC between Zuma, who runs around saying kill the farmer, and Malema, who's been doing that, and Jacob Zuma, who's always been accused of being a puppet, or basically of being an actor. It's just a Zulu. He's not interested in New World Order. And I maintain that that could be true. He could be a plant. And Jacob Zuma has told him to knock off singing that stuff and to knock it off. And he's really, really concerned about Malema getting all these illegal immigrants and some of these young Africans. And it only takes a handful, all intense and upset and going after the farmers any more than they already are. And of course, Jacob Zuma, some of the elements there are beyond control. And it's pretty shocked. He's saying, I was shocked by what happened, and this, even President Thabo Mbeki have offered with the Youth League, and the Youth League taking such firm radical positions against him. I've never seen him doing that before, Malema said. What he's telling them is to stop singing the song. He's putting his foot down as president, and they're kind of upset over that. You know, they don't know what to what side he's coming from, why he won't let them carry on with their kill the farmer stuff, but he's worried about international law. He's worried about his international partners that told him to knock it off. He's worried about a new day and a new emperor on this earth that may not put up with it or may split the place up, or maybe that's their plan. Who knows? But we'll keep our eyes on South Africa. Let's see here. The Christian Science Monitor. Israeli settlements threaten world security. No kidding. And, of course, this is an interesting interview between Mr. Brzezinski, and that was the Taliban's foreign policy advisor for a while, and Nathan Gardels. And they're talking about the disaster, which is Israel. No change there. U.S., this is Wall Street Journal, and basically there's, you know, Israel is provoking everyone and anybody. They're running around like bullies on the schoolyard, which they always do, and they've caused more trouble yet again with these settlements. And the Wall Street Journal carries it forward, the Wall Street Journal Online. U.S. pushes Iran sanctions, but China holds back. This Iran sanctions stuff is just, you know, double top secret probation for Iran and all this stuff, and it ain't gonna work. It's the same old, same old. Russia and China, they can't do anything with them. And, you know, if it's not one, it's the other. But it's the same old, same old. As we cruise into chaos. Let's see here. Travel chaos. Volcanic cloud from Iceland shuts down UK airports. This is Belfast Telegraph. And there's a huge volcano that went off over Iceland and showered ash all across Europe and shut down air travel. And that probably will be the top in the stock market or something along those lines. It's devastating. What's ironic is the British, the London, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Leasers in London, pretty much took Iceland down financially. Took some of their banks down. Now, their banks were overextended, but they basically pinpricked it under actual anti-terrorism laws and stuff. It's an interesting story about what happened in Iceland with their banks. But anyways, they were demanding more money from their banks. They were demanding cash, those Pink Rabbit Banksters and Leadsters. And from the looks of it, Odin sends them some ash instead of some cash. Yeah, Iceland sent them a bunch of ash instead of the cash they wanted. Kind of ironic. And that, of course, is ended up being a big travel disaster, and I don't know where it's going. There's all kinds of problems on this planet, and they just keep mounting. Let's come back over to finance, and Soros is talking again. Let's see what Soros says to Newsmax on April 17, 2010. Soros, Euro-EU will collapse if Germany doesn't make concessions. Billionaire financier George Soros thinks the euro and the European Union itself are at risk of breaking up if Germany refuses to play its traditional role and make concessions, he told a newspaper. Quote, the Germans have always made concessions needed to advance the European Union. When people were looking for a deal, not anymore, Soros said recently, told Del Sera. That's why the European project is stalled, and if it can't go ahead from here, it will go backwards. It's important to understand that if you don't make the next steps forward for the euro will go to pieces, and the European Union too. Soros, who was speaking at a variety of events in Italy this week, said, whereas in the past there had been the political will to go forward, now there's a lot of doubt that it is there. What's happening is Germany is reasserting itself and doing what it wants to do. It's not going to allow itself to be controlled because it never was really fully controlled anyways. And German soft power is deciding, like I've said, you got a Russian-German-Italian axis, and the Russian-German axis is in the spotlight. The Eurasian school of thought in Russia actually has basically a German-Russian Japanese axis, which is interesting in itself. But for European the basics are calling it a Russian-German-Italian axis because the Pope's involved and the Vatican approves of and everything else. But breaking Europe off into a Northern Europe and a Southern Europe would make sense even from the Euro perspective. But they're into Germany is running its long-term plan. And they do have a long-term plan, and the Russians are a big part of that. But cruising back over to America, we have a huge case of Goldman Sachs, and we have another problem with the SEC and another financial nightmare. And there'll be more financial nightmares as this big ash problem across Europe that shut down travel. Who knows what that's going to cost? But if the European economy stalls, well, that could be the pinprick to put us back into even a deeper and worse recession than we're already in. Let's go over to Russia, the head of our spear, and see what's going on over there. This is, it looks like Google News or AFP. AFP is just the basic press service over here in America. Let's see, your top anti-racist judge shot dead in Moscow. That big anti-racist judge got shot dead. And he said it was from a silencer. No one knows what happened. Medvedev said everything will be done so that people that organized and carried out the cynical crime are found and punished. I don't know his deal, but the anti-racist judge is dead. It's dangerous. It's dangerous stuff going against white rabbits long term because you never know what they're going to do. And of course you got someone getting in a lettuce patch doing something illegal in Moscow. I mean, you can get in a lettuce patch, I just wouldn't get caught. But who knows who did it or who knows what the motivations were. It was always rumored that different groups, attached to Anglosphere, and the Anglosphere dirty work is always carried out by little Jew rabbits. Now, of course, the Israelis, a lot of times, they carry the dirty water. And, of course, most of the listeners know about the Bolshevik Revolution and how they carry dirty water there. Little Jew rabbits, they got the call up, and they go in there and do what they do. Murder and mayhem is what they did to the Tsar and his family. But they're always carrying out dirty tricks and everything else. It's their job for their team. They're running that interference out in front. But so who knows who carried this out? You know, they're always trying to cause problems in Russia to claim, you know, racism and human rights violations and all kinds of stuff like that. Good luck. But who knows? Who knows? You know, when Putin came to power, one of the challenges for someone like Putin is he can't do everything he wants to do, and they're running a long-term plan. That long-term plan, there's not a lot of demoralization there. He doesn't want to demoralize society. He wants Russian nationalism, but at the same time, Russia doesn't really have clearly defined borders as it would like. It's not surrounded by oceans, so it's going to always have a problem with immigration, and he's got to play a lot of games. You know, he doesn't make all the rules on the planet. And in doing so, that immediately creates a problem. That problem is going to get a reaction, and that reaction is going to be from elements of Russian nationalism that want to be a little hardcore. They want to run down the street, and they want to do whatever they want to do because they think it's their country, and they should be able to do that. Maybe they're right, but that doesn't fit with his long-term plan. So the first thing he's going to do into that reaction is he's going to make sure they control many of the nationalist groups, and they're going to create controlled oppositions. And many of the top of those nationalist groups will be heavily influenced by Putin and Medvedev and the German soft power, and they're going to make sure none of it gets out of hand. And that's what you've seen among the nationalist groups that really hate Putin. Do they really hate Putin? Some of them do, because he won't let them defend themselves. And, you know, he's got to play a game he doesn't want to play, but yet he's got to play it. And in the end, I guess it'll all be explained to us. But it's just all full-spectrum practical politics. He doesn't get to make all the rules, so he's got to play that game, and that game creates a problem in a society that a bunch of healthy white rabbits that want to be able to defend themselves. They want to be able to carve out living space immediately. They want to be able to march up and down the street and zig heil. And of course, there's nothing really he can do for them, or nothing really he could do to help them in the short term, because he's got to run a long-term plan. And that long-term plan is for his team. What all that includes, I went various different directions on the show into that, but they're playing into certain events, and there's really no way to control that energy flow directly, so he can do it indirectly by creating nationalist groups that oppose him or that are Putin haters. Now, many of those tops of those nationalist groups will be Putin allies. But, you know, until they can really go full out and really explain it to everyone, that's what you got to do. You don't have time to sit down with little white rabbits that believe they're entitled to this and they're entitled to that, and maybe they should be, and explain to them the whole score and the whole scenario and how the universe works, and to give them a few examples of how the universe works. They don't really have time for that. So that's why they do things like that. And then, of course, it ends up with scenarios like this, where a top anti-racist judge gets shot dead in Moscow. But having lots of different opposition national forces, having lots of different angry skinheads who are constantly angry at Russia, angry at Putin, because they think in their minds they're not letting them defend their territory as they would like to, that becomes useful. That becomes useful, having opposition groups like that. And I'm guessing they control every single one of them, some way, shape, manner, or form. So that's kind of a brief tangent. But I would expect to see more nationalist groups go against him, or go against his policies, or speak out against him. They're not happy about it. He's not perfect. Well, it's not going to be perfect for a little bit longer here. And then, of course, more will come out, and things will become clearer. But they're very healthy, so when they're not allowed to run around and defend themselves and do what it is they're supposed to do in their area, well, they immediately become angry at who's ever in power, and he doesn't have time to sit down with them and explain them the whole game, so he gives them an outlet, an energy. He gives them basically an outlet to control that energy flow, and that's these opposition nationalist groups. And the different skinhead groups and all these different nationalist elements, some pro-Putin, some anti-Putin, some don't know what to think. But the ones in charge know the score. They know what they're working for. And we'll be seeing this come to fruition sooner rather than later. But it all has to do with the Russians and the Germans. Mark my words. Update. Russia pledges $50 million to replenish Kyrgyzstan. It's Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan, I guess it's called, the Central Asian. Russia is now through a problem reaction solution and did their own little revolution, a little color revolution in there. It was called on Stratfor. Stratfor is a free intelligence service. Sometimes I give you guys stuff from free intelligence services. Well, you can actually buy it, but the free version everyone can get. And so in keeping with the show, I make sure to go over information that can be right in front of your face for free any given day, as long as you're at a library or any internet connection. Kyrgyzstan and the Russian resurgence, Stratfor Global Intelligence, a prearranged revolution. And they took over it, and there's a big American air base there because Kyrgyzstan is, of course, near China. It's on the border of China. It's in between Tajikistan and Afghanistan. It's near Pakistan. It's near Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan. Russia is separated by Kazakhstan to Kyrgyzstan. And it's kind of Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and then China. And of course to the north, right to the, I guess, northeast would be Mongolia from Kyrgyzstan. But it's a pretty interesting area, and what Russia's doing is doing some little prearranged revolutions and putting their boys in there so they can start consolidating power across Eurasia. And it was fast, it was impressive, and it was very inexpensive. The Anglo elites don't really have time, and they're extremely vulnerable. And they're calling this piece, let's see what it is, Kyrgyzstan and the Russian resurgence. And they're talking about Russian flexing across Eurasia. And it kind of talks down some of their power, but at the same time, they seem pretty impressed. They don't understand, or they're not telling their readers everything going on that they know, or they're just blind. And their basic static analysis, they don't understand race. Russian resurgence is a function of its extreme geographic vulnerability. And the Russians don't really have any borders, so they're expanding. They basically exercise power across its periphery, across the whole of the place. And they are using a handful of different tools in the former Soviet republics. And that's political pressure, social instability, economic weight, energy connections, security services, and direct military intervention. And those are the basics there. And this one was a case of political pressure and putting your own guy in there, or a guy nicer to you. And it should be interesting to see whether or not they keep that base open for the Americans. I'm guessing they will. It'll just create another leveraging point. It's okay. It's just pooty-poot. I ain't mad at you or nothing. It just looks like you got too much to do. And since you're still sticking your nose in my business, I guess I pulled my own little mama bear revolution over there in Kyrgyzstan and give you something else to worry about. And you can still use the air base there since your troops are there, but it's going to cost you. Yeah, it's going to cost you. If you get lippy, I'll just throw you out of there. It's okay. It's just booty-poot. I ain't mad at you or nothing. They are on the offense day and night. Day and night they are moving. Day and night they will not rest. They do their job. And that is, how much of this is German soft power? Tremendous amount. Tremendous amount. They have the lucrative business deals, and German soft power is all over the place. It's a monster. It is a monster. It's the monster that Germans don't even know about. Let's see here. And it basically, the piece is talking about how Russia's trying to wrap up Eurasia and other things before the Anglo elites turn their eye back on Russia. But it's looking a little late because they're going belly up. Let's see. Russia and Germany, this is the Guardian. This is the Guardian in the UK. Russia and Germany start work on an $8 billion pipeline underneath the Baltic. This is Nord Stream will give Russia a third of the EU gas market. Russia and Germany are tying up the EU to Russian natural resources. It's very clever. Tie yourself to each other. Make yourself dependent on each other. And German soft power again is working. Supposedly they weren't going to get that pipeline. Supposedly there was going to be a bunch of environmental problems. But now goes the pipeline. You see how that works? Nord Stream, which is a great project for Europeans, all else being equal, this partnership between Russia and Germany is white rabbit dream, simply because it's a birdie in the hand. It's nothing we have to work on long term. It's there. It's a natural fit. It is juicy. It is juicy. And let's see. New York Post is whining. Yeah, Arthur Herman from the NewYorkPost.com. The bear is back. Poland's tragedy and Russia's gain. The plane crash that killed Poland's president and 95 others is a tragedy for the Polish people and a loss of the good friend for the United States. For Poland's neighbor Russia, however, it's an opportunity to push for hedge money over Eastern Europe as the Iron Curtain days. And let me interject here. And what's happened is, of course, the The Polish president went down in a plane crash. President Kaczynski, I guess it's pronounced, or Kaczynski, or I don't know how to pronounce Polish names, and I can't remember exactly how it's pronounced. But the point is, the man went down in a plane crash as he was going to Katyn Forest, and as the Germans tell me, it's pronounced. And what's happened is they're trying to blame the Russians or something like that. The Russians don't have an axe to grind in that. If it was just the Russians and the Polish, the Poles would have a lot of soft power by dealing with Anglo elites. The challenge is that you're not dealing with Russia. You're dealing with Russia and Germany. And in between Russia and Germany is Poland. Poland's a Catholic country. And who else is involved in this? The Popey Pope. And they have a lot of soft power themselves. So Poland is pretty much, you know, they're going to be broken in half between that mix. They're going to do what they're told, especially if it's best for European children. But I am told that this Polish president Kaczynski was a loudmouth. He's always denigrating everybody. He was denigrating the Russia. He was shooting his mouth off at Russia. He was shooting his mouth off at Germany. And he was constantly making them angry. He's an old school Pole, which means he fights the ghost of Stalin past. That's what an old nationalist do. They fight the ghost. They fight the ghost of Stalin past. They fight the ghost of Germany past, the ghost of Hitler past. They don't fight the pink rabbit present. No, they don't. That's one of their problems. But in all fairness to Lech Kaczynski, the president, in all fairness to Mr. Kaczynski, he was a Polish nationalist, and he surrounded himself with a lot of anti-Semites. Like all good Polish Catholics, he had tons of anti-Semites around him, and the Israelis hated him as well. And he wanted to have that big missile defense for NATO in there. And the Taliban said no. Or whoever owns Taliban said no. So basically, that wouldn't get in the way of the Russian, German, Italian access and whatnot. So it's an interesting case. Who benefits from this? Well, either it was an accident, which I have a feeling it may have been an accident. I doubt it, but it may have been, because apparently he was berating the pilots and everything else. Yeah, he's a little hothead Pole, and he's a Polish supremacist, if you can believe that. And he's basically bullying a China shop, but he was always leery of Russia because he's fighting the ghost of Stalin past. And he was always leery of Germany because he's fighting the ghost of Hitler past. But at the same time, he knew who did Katyn Forest. And Katyn Forest, or as most Americans call it, Katyn Forest. Katyn, K-A-T-Y-N. And who pulled all this nonsense in Europe was the Anglo elites and especially the front of the spears, little Jew rabbits. So he knew the deal. Some people said he was just a good actor and he was in it the whole way and just playing good cop, bad cop with the Anglo elites. I don't know. It's a very difficult call, but I don't see the Russians and the Germans having anything to do with this at all, simply because it's nothing in it for them. Now, would the Anglo elites send out the little Israelis to pull some deal in Poland, like some of the conspiracy theorists are saying? Peas in a pod don't have to conspire. They've got to get in front of a Russian, German, Italian access, and they can't really do it. If someone did that intentionally, that is reckless. That is reckless. Everyone at the top would know it already, and it is reckless. That is dangerous, dangerous stuff. Nothing I would be engaged in. But they're going to start doing more dangerous and reckless stuff. They've been a bull in a China shop. Their elites, the elites above them, have been a bull in a China shop ever since September 11th and slightly before then. They're in panic mode, total panic mode, and that is filtering down. And when that filters down, you never know what they're going to do. That is one of the challenges. But, you know, he goes on and say, 2,000 Russians elected Putin. As oil prices rise and begin to fill Russians' coffers, he promised to restore Russia's pride and power. With Price soon revealed the end of her 10-year chaotic experiment with democratic freedom. For 10 years, America sat idly by While Putin massacred Chechens, murdered dissident journalists, and jailed Russia's leading industrialists while installing his cronies in their place. We sat by while Putin tripled Russia's defense budget, helped Iran build and equip its nuclear reactor at Bashir, and sent the mullahs advanced missile systems and nuclear-sensitive technology. The U.S. did nothing, for Rice and others insisted that nothing interfere with our effort to get Russia to endorse U.N. sanctions against Iran, a country whose Russians were helping to arm. Finally, in the summer of 2008, the brutal Russian incursion in independent Georgia made the Bush administration change its mind about Putin, and then came a U.S. election and a new foreign policy team. Far from learning from Bush's mistake, Obama is now determined to compound them. The first step was abandoning our democratic Eastern European allies, including Poland, that had defied Putin by agreeing to host a U.S. missile defense system in their country. Obama dropped the plan because it offended the Russians. This was followed a week ago by the START treaty that locks us into permanent nuclear decline while Russia is free to modernize its nukes and even build its own missile defense shield. On the very day the treaty was signed came the coup against the government of Kyrgyzstan, which is a vital air supply line to our troops in Afghanistan. Like the crash that killed Kaczynski, this eliminated a leader who had defied the Kremlin over a U.S. base in his nation. What next? Putin and his puppet master, puppet President Dmitry Medvedev, now say they won't support any gasoline boycott against Iran, the one sanction that might halt Iranian nuclear program as it comes into final turn. We won't know the truth about this weekend's crash until the plane's black box flight recorder is safely out of Russian hands, but we already know the proof about Putin. People laugh when Bush said he looked into Putin's soul and saw a good man. Obama has looked into Putin's bloodstained hands and sees a leader we can deal with. Yeah, we know a side Mr. Herman's on. Herman doesn't want a white rabbit hole. No, he doesn't. He's happy in New York. And we're happy to keep him there. It's funny stuff, though, isn't it? Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how these news pieces read diametric. You know, your enemy reads things totally different from our enemy reads things totally different from Horace the Avenger. He doesn't play nice, though, but he does his job, and he's the head of the spear. He's riding that bear. Let's see here. Polish leadership decapitation benefits Russia. This is an interesting piece. This is one that made Rents.com, actually, or is advertising for it. But he does quote Kaczynski, and it's kind of interesting. So I'll read from it. This is on moneyteachers.org. That's moneyteachers.org, and it's called Polish Leadership Decapitation Benefits Russia. And they're attached to some more conspiracy-minded websites. But you got some good writers writing for that stuff anymore. With the tragic death of the president of Poland in a fiery plane crash, Russia moves one step closer to reestablishing the former Soviet Union and pushing Western influence out of its former Warsaw Pact allies. No doubt about it. It just isn't healthy to be pro-Western leader in any of the former Soviet-era republics. Just ask the Ukraine, Belarus, Georgia, or Kyrgyzstan. As soon as we took office in the presidential headquarters in our center of Warsaw, Mr. Kaczynski forged a very close relations with Ukraine and Georgia, determined to bring them closer to NATO and eventually have them admitted an American-led military organization. Like I said, a very unhealthy position, he's quoting. Mr. Kaczynski, however, believed passionately that strong NATO would prevent Russia from reasserting its influence over Eastern and Central Europe. When Poland joined NATO in 1999, becoming with Hungary the Czech Republic part of the first bloc of former communist countries to join the alliance, the move increased Poland's sense of security. It was obvious to us that this was only a tough security structure that was in the world, and that membership of NATO would only mean benefits for Poland, Mr. Kaczynski told the International Herald Tribune in an interview. Next up, the Czech Republic. If I were president of that republic, I would travel by rickshaw. But Mr. Kaczynski said that he did not mean that Russia's leader had abandoned their ideals to regain influence, like using natural resources, natural gas as a weapon and trying to influence politicians. Indeed, back in the early 1990s, my impression was that Poland's entry in the NATO would finally resolve these questions. And here I must admit I was wrong. What Mr. Kaczynski was wrong about was trusting the world's largest debtor nation to stand firm against its creditors in China and Russia. It's called the Golden Rulers. We have our Illuminati bankers to thank for this turn of events. Their commitments to the New World Order made them traitors a long time ago. Well, he's actually right on there. Illuminati defector Savali stated a while back, and I don't know who this guy is, that the United States would play a minor role in the new scheme of things. It only makes sense. Both Russia and China were turned into slave camps a long time ago. Russia's brief flirtation with democracy was short-lived, and as I predicted, only used to smoke out dissidents once and for all. Now it's back to dictatorship as usual. Mr. Kaczynski deeply ingrained suspicion of Russia and of Germany's close relationship with it. Mr. Kaczynski's deep relationship with ingrained suspicion of Russia, and that's the President Kaczynski, if I'm pronouncing it perfectly. ingrained suspicion of Russia and of Germany's close relationship with it often created tensions among Warsaw, Berlin, and Moscow. He lobbied hard for the United States to pull part of his controversial anti-ballistic missile slip. And basically it's talking about who benefits from this. I don't know about that. I don't know that Russia really cared one way or another, because they were going to do what they wanted to do, and there's nothing one country can do, like Poland sandwiched between Germany and Russia. You just can't do anything anymore. But speaking of the Rents.coms, Rents.com, for those that don't know, it is probably is one of the top few thousand websites in the world, and it's definitely one of the top 1,500 in the United States as far as read. It's read by everyone and anyone, and it's as big as Drudge. It's huge. It's epic. And they are running Dr. Kevin McDonald. Dr. Kevin McDonald, for my little conspiracy rabbits listening, my white rabbit, white nationalist type, racialist type, would already know who Dr. Kevin McDonald is. He's an expert on the Jew rabbits. And he's wrote some fascinating books, but they're carrying his articles now on Rents.com along with Dr. David Dukes. And that's pretty interesting. That is a big, big audience. And it's a lot more than just, you know, a lot of people think that it's just nutball articles and everything else. Well, it's not. They have a podcast they put out, and a radio show they put on it. It's actually broadcast on some AM band or something. But you can go to that website, and you can see Dr. Kevin McDonald's pieces there now, as well as some stuff from Dr. Duke, and it's fantastic. He's a good outlet. Now, a lot of people don't like that because he's Jewish, but that doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of question marks when it comes to the Jewish gene pool. You have some of it that's just European by convert, some of it that's somewhat mixed, and some of it that is wide sky, that no one knows, which is interesting and fascinating all at the same time. But some of it's known, some of it isn't known. And of course, they're carrying pieces by the great RealZionistNews.com. And RealZionistNews is run by another Jewish fellow who's an Orthodox Christian. And he's a fascinating brother, Nathaniel Kapner. And he's a real Jew. Yes, he is. You can go there and read his stuff. But I think it's interesting how there's a convergence of this stuff. And their new world order is basically very simple. It's white rabbit genocide. It's pretty obvious, too. I'm going to go back over a couple news events. I didn't hit them when I first started broadcasting, but this is an old one. This is May 21st, 2009. It's New York Post, Super Mogul's Secret Summit. And it talks about all the Anglo-American elites, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Bloomberg, whatever you want to call him. I call him Doomberg. People call him Mayor Bloomberg. George Soros, Oprah Winfrey, Eli Broad, Ted Turner, Rockefeller, and Rockefeller Senior and Junior. The who's who of the Anglo-American elites. And Oprah Winfrey's one of their golden girls. She's pretty much a fraud. Most white racialists know that. The conspiracy rabbit listeners probably don't know anything about her, but, you know, if the little Nazis on Stormfront pretty much probably had her pegged when they first came out, when they first started posting on old Stormfront. But the point is that she is one of their protected girls. You know, all these guys are protected. You do business with them, you can do anything you want to do and get away with it, and they are the Anglo-American elites. They're not my friends. They're not your friends. They're pink rabbit banksters and elitesters and who knows what else. But Oprah's in their crew, and Oprah just got her head knocked off. Oprah just got her head knocked off by Kitty Kelly. And Kitty Kelly is spelled K-E-L-L-E-Y, K-I-T-T-Y-K-E-L-L-E-Y, and Oprah just got her head knocked off. And now there's some guy saying he's a real father and that she's a total fraud. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Now, these are big, big deals in the Anglo-American elite. Going down, getting the screws put to them in a humiliating way. I want you to look for little signs like that as this game picks up pace. Goldman Sachs just got clocked. The SEC is starting to open up Goldman Sachs. Now, Goldman Sachs, of course, is Jew rabbit banking heaven. It's the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters. It's who knows what's going on there. You know, they're off the books for national. They're allowed to keep off the book assets for national security reasons. Think about that. But what I do know, there's a huge investigation going on. Now, most of my listeners, I get some, you know, pretty bright listeners that listen to stuff very intently, a lot more intently than I even know about. And every once in a while, I get asked a direct question. I've said before that Taliban isn't owned by you think he's owned by. Well, we haven't really seen this thing play out yet, but someone else is shooting the calls there. He's just a mulatto prince, just a talking head. He's an actor and a bad actor. But we'll let this one play out. But something else that should have your attention is that Bob has just, that's old Bob Whitaker, whitakeronline.org. You can go to my my front page of my website. There's going to see a direct link to Bugs. He's just posted three pieces in alluding to super terrorism. What the pieces are basically saying, if any event like that happens in America, it's like a prison yard. It's an iron question. You're either pro-white or pro-white genocide. It's like being on the bus in the ghetto. If you're white, you're going to have to stick together. And a prison yard, of course, is very racial. He's also saying that he's worked among these elites and they don't have the type of power you think they have, and that should be obvious with Oprah getting clocked and Goldman Sachs getting clocked. He's also saying that the shooting probably wouldn't be end until this part of the game was over. In other words, he's saying that would be back to basketball. For my listeners, he's saying that you know, that if a scenario like that goes, the ideal that this evil elite could use that to down this or to use that to take a vice grip of control is a farce, and maybe for a day or an hour, but an event of super terrorism, an event of a dirty bomb going off and you know, taking down a square mile, or a small nuke taking down a square mile, or who knows what. Everything would become racial overnight, and it would be rabbit rohawa, is what he's saying in plain, simple, English, is the way it reads. And those will be up on my Twitter. Those are mandatory reading. In all the years of reading Bob, someone had posted once Bob started writing this, three pieces on super terrorism alluding to that every time Bob gets a knee ache, it tends to rain. You might want to take that under advisement, anyone listening to this. Now, white rabbits are typically prepared for anything. I mean, you've been prepared for war for decades. Since, you know, I think it was, the steely-eyed lone wolfer said has been ready for decades on end, and most gun-carrying Americans are ready for anything. White rabbits are typically ready for anything but practical politics, but when they don't like talking. But the game can always change, at least in the short term. That would be an opening intro. It would by no means be over. Even if America were all white, you're still going to have other problems. We still have more things going on this planet than meets the eye. That's all I'll say on that on today, but you should be aware of those pieces are out there. My experience with Bob, that he doesn't write he's never written a single word without thinking about it. So take it under advisement. If you see something crazy like that, it may be back to basketball or something, but you're all ready for that anyways. But I wanted to let you know that that's there, and I took the care to put it up on my Twitter. There's links to them on my Twitter. But be aware that these guys don't have the type of power you think they have. And even these Ranger battalions, where I'm at, there's all these Ranger battalions. And these Ranger battalions don't look like anything you think you've seen before in the military. You know, I started calling them the Wehrmacht. And that's what they look like. They may be under totally different orders than you think. In other words, who knows? Who knows someone could put across the Blackberry's that 888 code, and who knows what they'll do, but they wouldn't be having any interest in Americans, per se. And I've already defined an American for you. If you have an issue with that definition, well, then I guess America's not for you. America's a white rabbit hole. And if it ceases to be a white rabbit hole, it'll cease to be America. U.S. citizenship, to most people, to most white rabbits with half a brain, is just a visiting pass. That's the way everyone looks at it. But that's what Bob is saying. Bob is saying that in any event of some big super terrorist act, that you can't imagine anyone stopping shooting until it's all over with and all that stuff, or at least this phase is. And since that piece came out, I thought I'd tell you that. You know, it's practical politics until practical politics ends. And even then it would be practical politics. If you're on a team and you have to give them a speech, well, you're going to have to go off talking points and that type of thing. So, you know, it's not over until it's over, but in any type of thing like that, it would be a different game going on. They're not going to, what he's telling you is these evil elites don't have, there's no secret cabal that has the type of power you think. What they do have is a bunch of law-abiding white rabbits who most likely would stop obeying the law. And that's all I'll say about that for today, but that's common sense for a lot of rabbits. But the fact that Bob's writing that, I thought I'd let you know. And the fact that someone posted that, that he tends to get a knee ache right before it rains, you might should know that. But I'll be here until they shut down the internet trying to talk you through this as we come into these in-game scenarios. And because he's written that piece and because some of the different things I've heard, I will go increase my timetable too and put out more information for you guys. I'm going to, in the very near future, I'm going to release some of the first topics I decided I was going to talk to you in putting out this MP3. The things that the Dr. Farrells are writing about, the things that he's alluding to, you may not be picking up. A lot of it's subtle. You're going to have to know a few different things. I'm going to point it out to you in black and white and plain English so that you don't get blindsided by some things. And I'll try to do that. I've been planning on doing that way even before I did this MP3. Parts of this MP3 that I'm going to put out on this stuff was done long, long ago, right when I got asked to do this. The only way to play it fair is to tell you everything. What's really going on, what these guys are really about, the direction this stuff goes. And I can only point you in a direction. But since Dr. Farrell's put stuff in plain black and white for anyone that can read, I'm going to point out the obvious of what he's saying. And you've never heard anything quite like it. So you might as well just get ready for that. Because if you're going to listen to me, I'm going to give you everything I have, no holds barred. And worst case scenario, like the dirty bomb stuff, God forbid that some crazy thing happens like that in America. But what Bob's telling you, if something like that does happen, I might as well point out the obvious. He doesn't say things like that unless something, the rumor mill, or he's worried about something like that. And it would be horrible if something like that went off on my house or something like that, but life would go on for white rabbits. But that would be the first phase of whatever big scenario we're coming into. And that would be quite an opening act, I guess. But what I'm going to really talk about today is I'm going to talk about some historical revisionism. And this is for any of the nationalist groups. The nationalist groups are nationalist groups that typically are revolve around the ghost of their ancestors. Not so much the white nationalists, but the nationalist groups that always get offended when someone else uses their symbol or when they can't step up and talk in plain English. And this is especially for what I will label the Confederate rabbits. But I will talk to all the different groups in Anglosphere that have been attacked. It doesn't matter whether it's the Boers. It doesn't matter whether it's an English child. It doesn't matter whether it's a southern white rabbit in America. They've all been under attack a little bit more so than, say, the white rabbit in Minnesota. The white rabbit in Minnesota is under the same social engineering. He's under the same program of genocide. But the elites play a tag of who's it. And obviously the first on the scene would be the Boers. The Boers are being genocided. That's white genocide. Next on the scene would be the English child. They just don't have any room to maneuver. And their flag get attacked. The St. George's flag is racist. You've all heard this. The next on the list would be the Southern white rabbits. And also the French Canadians in Montreal are under attack. Their symbols are under attack. Their history is under attack. Which means our family's under attack. That's how I view it. So I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about the Civil War and the second coming of the Banksters. They have an M.O. I have been, this broadcast has been downed. Some people criticize it because I don't go into details. I don't go into details. Anyone can read details and try to become an expert on certain historical events. I think in macro terms and in understanding what my enemy's going for in macro terms. If it is just attacking southern white rabbits, they're not attacking the white rabbits' culture in the South. It's very difficult for white rabbits to think in these terms because white rabbits do not think racially, and that is racial. They don't think in those terms. They think that they're attacking a flag. They're not attacking a flag because it's Southern culture. They're attacking it because it's implicitly white. They're not attacking, I mean, if you're going to attack Southern culture all around the world, you're going to attack Southern American culture. You're going to attack chicken and biscuits. Because when I say chicken and biscuits or black-eyed peas and that type of thing, everyone knows it's Southern food, Southern American food. They're not attacking you because you're a Southern white rabbit. They're attacking you because you're white. You just happen to be one of their it groups for the time being. They're not attacking, you know, everyone's talked about the Springbok jersey and the South African and the Boer farmers and or even the name Rhodesia and the Rhodesian flag and the old South African flag. And they're attacking it for cultural reasons. They're not attacking the Springbok jersey because they want to attack rugby. They're attacking it because it's implicitly white. When they attack the St. George's flag in England, they're not attacking it for cultural reasons. They're attacking it because it's implicitly white. And the ultimate example of implicitly white symbols are anything from German from World War II. They're not attacking it because it's German. They're attacking it because it's implicitly white. It can mean nothing else but white. The Confederate flag will never be anything else but white. And that's why they're attacking it. It's very important for you to understand that. It isn't about you. It's about us. I'm going to repeat that. It's not about you. It's about us. If it were just about you, they'd be attacking chicken and biscuits. It's just about the Boers. They'd be attacking something really cultural to them. Maybe just criticizing their language or something. If it was just about the English people, they'd be attacking maybe fish and chips. They're not attacking it for the reasons most white rabbits think they're attacking it, and they always try to fight it on cultural grounds. No, they're attacking it for racial reasons. They don't like us. Their program of white rabbit genocide, well, that's what they're about. There'll be a logical reason for it in the end. It just wouldn't seem logical now if I were to start spouting stuff like that off. Or why I really think they're trying to wipe us out. It's going to be something crazy. It doesn't make any sense, but we don't need to deal with all that. We need to keep it simple. I would like to be able to get my mind around all that, but for this broadcast, we keep it simple. But there's a piece by Sam Dixon, and I'm going to talk about some Confederate history. Because yesterday's enemy is today's family member. Yeah, yesterday's enemy is today's family member. There are no white Americans now that aren't going to be related on some end. It just depends on where you want it to go back to. I realize this. My mother, I grew up basically a middle class family. My father basically was a union man, and he was a union type worker. And my mother worked was another union type worker, but she worked at a grocery store. And my mother, through no fault of her own, has a couple ancestors who were, because of that, she basically got into some different historical foundations in America. If you've been in America for any length of time, you probably can get in, especially if you're white, you can get in one of these historical foundations, you know, Sons of the Confederate, Sons of the American Revolution. There are dozens of them. And when you get in one, there'll be dozens more you're related to, by blood. And it's kind of funny. And so I'm looking at this thing, and they're at this meeting, and so through no fault of my own, you end up involved in this stuff simply by accident. My mother's sister signed her up, and vis-a-vis, of course, her children get in, whatever. What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. They just charge you dues if you want to pay dues. It's no big deal. But you realize, in being involved in one of these organizations, on how much white Americans are all related. I did not know I had any relatives in, say, Oklahoma. I didn't know that. And I have dozens upon dozens of them. They're first cousins now, but they're cousins, third, fourth cousins. I mean, they are relatives. And a lot of people at these different meetings were dumbfounded how many different groups are related. It's kind of funny. But if you've been in America any length of time, if you're white, there's been no recent white immigration in America. No, there hasn't been recent white immigration. If you're a white immigrant in America, you pretty much got lucky, because, or maybe we got lucky, but there hasn't been any recent white immigration in America. Maybe the guy that runs VDARE, Peter Brimlow, was the last white man to be let it in. But most of the immigration, post-1965, you know, there's been more Africans let in post-1965 than wherever let in under slavery, and America was 90% white. But the last great immigration was at the beginning of the 19th century, and you got the some of the Irish and the Italians and whatnot. But even if you're East Coast Irish, you'll be amazed at how many different Irish you'll be related to that were already in America, and how many different Southern groups you'll be related to. It's always shocking to me. It is outright shocking how close Americans are related. And there'll also be Canadians that you'll be related to. Some of these different historical foundations are comedy, because once you join them, they do, you know, what they do is immediately connect all this ancestry through computers. And it is outright comedy. How many of these groups are, you know, you'll be related to people you have no idea over. So if you're a Southern rat and you think you're alone, you're not. You're going to be related to all kinds of Yankees, and maybe some famous ones, maybe some ones you like, dislike. But joining those type of organizations, or getting involved in, or even having your mother become involved in one by accident, is eye-opening how close white Americans are related, Southern and Northern. I'm in a neighborhood right now that happens to have a neighborhood full of country rabbits in the North, in the Midwest. I mean, it is country rabbits. You know, they're making berry wine, and the stuff is good, too. Rabbits like that berry wine. But it's comedy how much white Americans are related. And by and large, it'll end up being comedy how much Europeans are related in general. If you're in Europe and you think Germans and Poles are separate, you know, you got little skinhead groups, Polish skinhead groups that go knock heads with German skinhead groups. Stuff like that happens. You should get involved in one of these historical foundations and realize who all you're related to, because they're all connected. Yesterday's enemy is today's family member. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's Confederate History Month, and so a lot of things come up with Abraham Lincoln. My enemy has a macro MO. Its macro MO is usually war and destruction, reconstruction, consolidation of power. But if you want to do business with the Pink Rabbit Bankers and Elisters, it appears to me that you got to start by shedding blood. You know, I don't know everything there is to know about how Lincoln was born, how he was raised. I don't believe half of it. I don't believe anything about these guys. Anytime I see this MO of someone going to war and shed some blood, I know immediately something's going on. Just like Iraq. They went to war, they annihilated the place, and then they go into reconstruction, consolidation of power. It's an MO. In the British Isles, you see this with Cromwell. And I'm not by any means attacking the people that Cromwell represents, the English people. But basically what he did was he took money from the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Leinsters. But there's a price to pay. You got to shed blood. He went in and he annihilated Ireland. Annihilated the place. Killed defenseless women and children and churches. Nothing remarkable about the man at all. And that was the big setup of Anglo, what we think of in modern terms as Anglo banking, moved into the roost in London there. And of course, the average English child standing underneath his statue now is surrounded by speckly brown rabbits, or as one of my listeners calls them, orc rabbits. That should tell you something right there. But anytime you see this MO in history, and by the way, you can do a program and you can go back to different European wars where this is in effect. You can go into when they first came into Rome, how they came into Rome, Babylon. This stuff is nothing new. And of course, they prefer to kill white rabbits, and they'll kill white rabbits usually over a stick of gum or less. But slavery was just a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of low-cost labor. If Abraham Lincoln was worried about getting rid of slaves, he would have went scorched earth and killed all the slaves and killed all the slave owners. Only 2% of the South owned slaves, if that. He wasn't interested in necessarily that. That would come later. A lot of parties are convinced that he was going to deport or export slaves. Maybe he was going to. He also got shot in the head. You don't get a little bit pregnant. anytime I see that MO, I know someone came to power over a deal, or someone came to power over money. I just don't trust the Lincolns of the world. I don't trust the Cromwells. It has nothing to do with Yankee. I'm a Yankee by default. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with American general, white American general. It has to do with an enemy. And the first rule is know your enemy, because if you don't know your enemy, you're going to repeat your ancestors' mistakes, right? You're going to end up fighting stupid wars instead of the enemy. But the enemy has that MO, and they always work off that. And you know, Abraham Lincoln is a very sensitive character. Attacking him can be very sensitive. But there's a piece, and I'm going to put this piece up on my Twitter as well and on my Facebook. It's Sam Dixon. It's Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. I support all historical revisionists when it comes to these guys that did business off Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters, because I don't think the truth is known. I don't think the truth is known. Now, is he the, you know, you can argue that he was going to deport slaves one way or another, but if you're a dictator, and that's what he basically was, and you get in power and you want to end low-cost labor, you don't act like that. You end low-cost labor. You know, he could have walked through the South with Sherman and annihilated the slaves and annihilated the 2% that owned them, and the average white rabbit would be scratching their heads dumbfounded. They didn't do that. That wasn't part of the agenda of the people behind him. And in all fairness, there were agent provocateurs in the South. There are more Lincolns in the South now, to the country rabbits, the Confederate, to the people that would want a Confederacy now or states' rights. There are more Lincolns in the South now than anywhere else. They have the place stacked. The Lindsey Grahams. Even the head of the Christian Coalition, the Ralph Reeds, those James Edwards, the Mike Nifongs, these guys that look like, a lot of them look like perfectly normal white rabbits, but there's something seriously wrong with them. The Newt Gingriches. The South is stacked with the Jimmy Carters. They are traitors. They are traitors. By and large, in my opinion, there's something seriously wrong with this equation, but they run this game all the time. And so in looking at the macro pattern, anytime I see that present, and it's been present in Europe for hundreds of years, but post Cromwell became pretty pronounced. That's how they operate. They didn't care who won the Civil War. They just wanted a bunch of bloodshed, because, you know, that's how they get their hooks back into you. That's where it starts. And once you do business with them, once you become a trader, once you accept whatever position for power or money, they own you. And if you don't do what they say, well, you end up shot in the head normally, or something along those lines. That's how they operate. They don't make any, there's no mystery to it. But anytime I see that MO, I don't see a hero. They always make them into hero. Cromwell's a hero, is he? Is he, as a little English kid, sits right underneath the banking dynasty he founded, right underneath his statue, surrounded by pretty much strangers in his house. Those are strangers they let in your house. Not only did they let them in your house, his descendants and the banking cartel that set itself up after him or with him, but they actually provoked them to try to harm you. So there's a big problem with this. And Abraham Lincoln is controversial, and he deserves to be controversial. I don't like any of them. Anyone that goes to war and starts wiping out, anyone that does business with the Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters, anyone that does business with the Red Hippopotamus, they own you outright forever. There's no going back. There's no coming back in the fold. Either a traitor. Any time, I've said this before, anytime you get a traitor in any way, shape, manner, or form, they're done. But Abraham Lincoln, of course, there's a lot of bitter memories over it. The South was basically, everyone went to war over something stupid. Everyone says it's about slavery. It's not about slavery. Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters will shed white blood over a stick of gum. They don't hesitate to kill. They don't have problems with going to war. If they had problems with going to war, you know, it wouldn't be so pronounced. They wouldn't do it so often. In fact, Nathaniel Hawthorne, I'll give you an American tangent. Go on a little tangent here. American Hawthorne talks about the Star Spangled Banner. And he talks about the Star Spangled Banner and in the Scarlet Leather. Most Americans do not know a banner is not necessarily a flag. Oh, a banner is a logo. And what he talks about in the Banner of the Republic, in the Scarlet Leather, he talks about two banners of the Republic. And I have pictures of both these. There's actually a civil flag in America.
There's a Star-Spangled Banner that's a civil flag, and there's a Star-Spangled Banner that's a military flag. One of them has the lines vertical. The civil flag has the lines on the flag vertical, the red stripes. The military flag, the flag of war, has horizontal. No one on this planet has ever seen that civil flag post-Civil War, in my opinion. I've never seen the thing. Most people don't even know it exists. I have pictures of it here. Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote about it. But these guys are war machines. That's what they do. That's what they do. And so the first rule is to know your enemy. Know your enemy's tactics. Know that it sets up agent provocateurs. It goes problem, reaction, solution. No big deal once you know about it. And, of course, the South right now is full of Lincolns, full of Southern Lincolns. They look good. They talk good. But unlike Sherman and his scorched earth policy, they'll put the sword right in your back, not in your front. Now, why are they there? They're there because, the next great strategy for the Anglo elites, if they get the ball rolling, was to break up Russia. That didn't go so well. But their strategy was to break up Russia and to pin white rabbits down and apply their South African model. Their South African model, of course, is democratize, disenfranchise white rabbits, and destroy white rabbits, or white rabbit genocide. I'm going to repeat that. It's democratize, disenfranchise, and once you democratize, let's say, well, I'll come back to this in a minute. Democratize, disenfranchise, and then white rabbit genocide, just like South Africa. They can't go anywhere. They've been disenfranchised. They don't have a home. That's the model. Well, the next obvious model would be to do it in Russia, and they failed at that. And then, of course, they would apply it to North America, because there's more than enough non-whites and white rabbit living spaces to apply to make everyone a minority, and, of course, to apply this model. Democratize, disenfranchise, white rabbit genocide, destroy them. And it works pretty good if you can get away with it. And, of course, in Texas, they would give Texas secession. They would democratize it. And then, of course, they disenfranchise whites and stoke mestizo ethnic conflict against them. And then you'd have Boer Farmer Redux revisited. They'd do this all across the South. You'd get secession, but you won't get a home. You understand how they operate. And the Lindsey Grahams, they're all there right for that, in my opinion. And it's pretty much in your face. They started this in America, the automotive companies. They started stoking some stuff between American automotive companies who are basically in the North, Yankee land, so-called Yankee land, and some of the Southern automotive companies, which are a lot of, there's Toyota down there, there's, I believe, BMW. And they started this stuff, and some of the Southern political class started talking about letting GM go on, or doing things that were obviously, they were playing the role of agent provocateur to try to stir up problems between North and South. They were already kind of starting that. The first rule is to know your enemy. Don't fall for any of that stuff. They'll give you secession. They just won't give you a home. I don't mind secession of Texas. I don't care about states' rights. I think states' rights is fine. I think Southerners should have an independent culture and everything else. I'm not worried about that because I know that they're not about putting up walls. But allowing Texas secession without white rabbits getting a home is genocide. And they'll do it to you time and time again. That's what they were geared up for. Why didn't they go through with it? Well, they didn't get Russia, and they ran out of time. Their timetable has been annihilated. Not just screwed up, annihilated. They're in trouble. So you got a little lucky on that, but know your enemy. Don't repeat your ancestors' mistakes, because yesterday's enemy is today's family member. In reality, yesterday it was a family member anyways. We just didn't realize it. And we have a golden opportunity after to go after the red hippo. We have a golden opportunity to bring down the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters for all time. And they will be down for the count. I don't know everyone in the South that's a problem. I don't need to know. There's parties that do know that. I just do my job and try to point out the obvious. But it's not just about the Southerners. It's not just about you're just on that particular list today. It's not about country rabbits. You know, they're making fun of the fact that they talk slow. Well, just because they talk slow, Bob talks slow, but that doesn't mean he thinks slow. And they, of course, they rip down everything. But it's not just about Confederate flags. They're attacking you for being white. It's just very difficult for you to understand that, why this type of betrayal. And, of course, if it were just the South, it would be just the South and social engineering in the South. It's not just about the South because it's in Minnesota, it's in Michigan, it's in Illinois. We all know that. You have family members there to know that. It's not just about the Boer farmers. They think it's all about them. No, it's about us. It's not about you, it's about us. And that's a good thing. It's important for white rabbits to understand that. White rabbit genocide is not restricted to any one area, but they do move it around. They do move it around. There's groups that get, you know, tagged in the writ. They'll allow Montreal secession, but they won't allow the white French rabbits that pretty much built the place, pretty much built a beautiful European city out of the wilderness. They'll allow them some succession, but they won't allow them to have a home. And so that's what you have to understand. Don't let them pin you down. Right now, country rabbits, the ones near me, well, they can go back and forth. They can move around. Well, the South African Boer farmers aren't so lucky. I guess many of them, I guess, could up and leave and be a legal immigrant somewhere. I've always said I would up and leave with Russia ASAP. I would have done it long ago because they're not going to kick out white people. You know, you can get citizenship there, in my opinion, if you're white. But for some reason, they don't want to leave their land or whatever, and they allow themselves to be pinned down. And at a certain point in time, it becomes pretty difficult against this type of machine. And white rabbits go blind in democracy. They go blind against this stuff because they don't realize why they're being attacked. They think it's just something about their culture. It has nothing to do with your culture. It has something to do with you and what you are. They're obviously in total combat. And, of course, they always attack the old school wasp. The old school wasp has become a symbol of Yankee culture. The old school wasps are pretty much all died out. They pretty much all died out except a handful at the top. And there are some Saxons like Bob. There are some Saxons like Bob, but he's hardly... I break them up anymore into Angmos and Saxons. There's Saxons left, but most of the Angmos are pretty much, if they're not at the top of one of these family dynasties, are pretty much extinct. The North is by and large all Irish, and the front groups, of course, are the Chris Matthews and the Alan Colmes, and they've, you know, Chris Matthews isn't Jewish, but Alan Colmes is, and the Jews pretty much make up the new wasp, always attacking Southern anything, because the Southerners scare them, simply because it's implicitly white. They attack anything white. In America, most of the listeners don't know, in America we used to do the stiff arm salute. The stiff arm salute, we used to raise it and pledge allegiance to the American flag. I have several old pictures of America. I never did this growing up, but in America long, long ago, before World War II, we used to do that. We used to pledge allegiance to the American flag with a stiff arm salute, just like a Nazi salute. Well, it's not a Nazi salute. It's an old, ancient European symbol for loyalty. And, of course, you know, the Jew rabbits have to attack any loyalty the Gentiles have for each other, because any loyalty you have for each other is not a loyalty to them, and no loyalty to them is no loyalty to their God, that type of thing. And that's why when you give the stiff arm salute now, it's considered anti-Semitic. But in America, did that long before any Hitler or World War II. America, which is most Americans don't know that. But America is a fascinating place. It's a fascinating place and a fascinating, it will have proved a prominent role. But the Southern rabbits need to understand that it's not just about you, it's about us. Yeah, you're not in this alone, and no one has a problem with giving you a home. I do have a problem with white rabbit genocide. I do have a problem if you don't understand the game, or if I felt a group was getting ready to fall for one of my enemy's pranks. Because we know the enemy cold. How he acts time and time again. He pulls the same tricks time and time again. And, of course, it's easy when you have a bitter history, or it's easy if you have a family that's been harmed. I'll talk from personal experience. I was actually named by a great-grandfather of mine. He didn't have any sons, and so my father, who was very good, my father liked him a great deal, let him name me, because I'm a boy. And so he gave me his last name as a middle name to carry on the family name. But he owned a large, large farm in the South at one time, prior to them passing on. And at one time, it was a lot bigger than that. But his family, during the Civil War, and this was, I won't go into exactly where it was at. It was in the South. And his family during the Civil War had one of the Yankee big shots, one of the Union generals or whatever on the way back, or a lieutenant or someone that could give a command order, basically took all his cattle and took all his horses. Now, he had a big, nice cattle farm. Why would he? Well, let me go back over the story. A lot of Americans that came in from the East way prior to even the Civil War, that came in America, even from the British Isles, that had farms maybe in somewhere like Ireland taken from them or whatever, and they ended up making their way to America. Well, land, for the foreign listeners, land in Tennessee at one time was pretty reasonable. You just had to fight Indians for it and stuff. Land out east, if you wanted to be a big farmer in Pennsylvania or a big farmer outside of New York, you're going to have a lot of money at the time. However, you could go west and you could get yourself some land in Kentucky or Virginia or Tennessee. You could do okay for yourself there if you knew how to farm. And if you maybe a big cattle farmer, you wanted to be a big cattle farmer, well, you could do something, but of course you had to fight for it. And so that's how he ended up way over there, which is kind of funny. Ended up owning land way over there when most of the other relatives were back east. But to make a long story short, in the American Civil War, he had all his cattle, prize horses taken from him by a Yankee big shot, a Union soldier who was basically lied, and he thought he was going to be paid for it, and he followed to get paid. He followed them several miles to get paid, but of course they screwed him over. Now, what he was saying is, if they didn't pull that con, he always thought that a lot of the Union soldiers wouldn't put up with that. He said they weren't interested in stealing, or he didn't see anything. He didn't get anything burnt to the ground, thank goodness. But some of the places, of course, were a lot more violent than others. And some of the different, it only takes one bad person in charge, like a Lincoln, to issue a command, a side order, something like that, and one bad general or a couple bad lieutenants and a couple bad soldiers, and you have a disaster on your hand. That'll be in the history books forever. In Iraq, many listeners have seen all this crazy stuff out of Abu Ghraib, or however the place isn't pronounced, the prison. Disgusting stuff. Most Americans, especially white Americans, if they thought a soldier was raping anyone, I don't care what they look like, take the American soldier, put him in tribunal, and hang him. But of course, we don't. It only takes a handful of bad apples and one bad order, and you end up in a situation like that that is a disaster. So I don't doubt there's a lot of horrible things done in the South, because it only takes a handful to do a lot of horrible things. But by and large, I've never seen white soldiers act up en masse. I'm sure it's happened, but by and large, and only a couple bad apples, and the next thing you know, all your reputation in Iraq is over with. And that's the way that works. So in the South, there's a handful of Union soldiers, and definitely the guys in charge, that didn't care much how they treated the place. And they did a lot more than just steal cattle. They did all kinds of stuff. And there's bitter memories, and those bitter memories are something to stoke ethnic conflict over. There's bitter memories between some elements of Poland and some elements of Germany. Now, does it have anything to do with the Polish or Germans? No. No, it has nothing to do with those people alive today. It's about pink rabbit banksters and elitesters, because they're always there. Their MO is always there, and it's always, and they will, but they will start ethnic conflict over that, and it does work. You should be aware of that. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with us. That's just their game. Their game is ethnic conflict. And anything from the past becomes fair game. In Iraq, there was ethnic conflict between the Shia and the Sunni. Anything to start conflict, they will. And we saw that between the North and the South start up over something having to do with automotive. But they were just testing the waters. That won't work right now, most likely, because too many Southerners are related to too many Northerners and that type of thing. Yankees like yours truly has too many relatives in too many different parts of America, and it just wouldn't work that same way. But, you get a couple of Asian provocateurs, you get things instigated, next thing you know, America's split up, state secession starts, and you get state secession, but you get no home. You get no home, and then they start the machine, democracy, disenfranchise. And sure, you can live with black rabbits. Sure, those black rabbits are wonderful. No, don't let them run some game on you. No one has a problem. They're not attacking chicken and biscuits. If they're attacking Southern culture, they would be attacking chicken and biscuits. They're not attacking rugby. If they're attacking rugby for the Springboks, they would be attacking some other rugby team. They're attacking it because it's implicitly white. They're attacking it because you're just on their list today or this year or the last 50 years. You're just front on the list. It doesn't mean everyone else isn't on the list. No, you'll be there too. They attack symbols in Montreal that are explicitly white. I just can't off the top of my head think of it, but if it were just about a handful of white rabbits, they wouldn't be destroying all of Anglosphere with this stuff, right? So it's never just about you. It's not just about the St. George's flag. It's just implicitly white. But when it comes to Confederate flags in America, there's always a lot of controversy over it because it's implicitly white. Everyone in the world knows it's a white flag. It's kind of like flying a swastika. It's a white flag. It will always be a white flag. And then there's a lot of debates over flags. White rabbits like debating stuff, and they like getting into it. But anytime anything's implicitly white, it's off limits to debate for me. I don't debate it because they're not interested in having some dialogue about what really happened in the Civil War, and I don't believe anyone listening to this knows what really happened coming into it, how it actually started. It didn't start in the South. It started in, like, Massachusetts from troops from Maryland or something like that. The whole thing needs to be rewritten. Our whole entire history will be rewritten, going back a lot longer than that. But you know, it's a good place to start with Lincoln. And the flag for the South, the Confederate flag, there's always a lot of controversy because it's implicitly white. If they were attacking a flag over slavery, they'd be attacking the Saudi Arabian flag because the Saudis owned more slaves than any southern white rabbit could ever dream of, even the plantation owners. The Muslim flag... flew over more slaves than any white rabbit could ever imagine. And in fact, it even flew over white rabbit slaves. So this idea that they're attacking a flag because it's a symbol of slavery is a bunch of nonsense. There may be some stupid black rabbit that repeats that nonsense, but they're attacking it because it's implicitly white. They attack anything white. What's their problem? I don't get into psychoanalyzing it right this minute, but we don't need to know all that. But anytime something becomes implicitly white, I lay off of it. I don't debate it. It's kind of like someone yelling at your sister because they don't like her lipstick on. They're trying to debate the color of her lipstick, but they're not debating the color of her lipstick. They're simply attacking her for being white. It's just off limits. In your opinion, the Confederate flag is racist. You're just saying that because we're white. Anti-Confederacy is a code word for anti-white. I do stuff like that all the time. I told the country rabbits up here to do it. Don't let them attack something. But anytime something comes, it becomes implicitly white, I don't touch it. It's not open for public debate because no one's debating it reasonably. They're simply attacking it because they're white. So basically, anytime I see any type of symbol become implicitly white, I lay off of it. I don't engage in public debates on it. And if someone starts to engage on it, talking about the Springbok jersey or the Rhodesian flag, I go immediately into talking points, immediately into consistent message. In your opinion, it's racist. You're just saying that because they're white. Anti-Rhodesian flag is just a code word for anti-white. A lot of people don't like that, but they're not interested in any debate. You see all these nice Confederate rabbits, and that's what our enemy does. They attack the nicest rabbits, white rabbits on the earth, because the English people are very nice people. They're very prim and proper. They don't understand why these people are just waging war on them. The southern white rabbits are very nice. They're very, very nice. And then, of course, they just sit there and they have people waging war on them. But debating it is a waste of time. You just make your point to it and move on. And the country rabbits tend to like that. In your opinion, the Confederate flag is racist. You're just saying it because we're white. Anti-Confederacy is just a code word for anti-white. It works. It works. But it is implicitly white, and it becomes off the topic, off the debate topics. Maybe behind closed doors you can have a rational debate, but there needs to be a lot more historical revisionism on this stuff, a lot more. Not demonizing Yankees because, you know, I don't know anyone in the North alive that would run around killing white Southerners. Let's face it, the people running around killing white Southerners are not exactly... people from Illinois. There's a small group of pink rabbit banksters and leasters, and their talking heads these days are by and large Jewish or the Chris Matthews, which I don't think he's a WASP, but I don't know. He's either WASP or Irish, but they're simply a handful. There's no room for it anymore. There's no room for traitors. Traitors are a lot easier to spot now. It's a lot easier to spot a Lincoln in the South now simply because there's no room for it. It's the Iron Question time. But don't fall for any of that nonsense that they're only interested in your culture. They're not interested in debating culture. They're not talking about, they're not attacking chicken and biscuits. Again, you know, Southern culture is represented by many things, not just a flag. A culture's a whole spiel of things to attack. They're only attacking anything implicitly white. Chicken and biscuits isn't necessarily implicitly white. But they're not attacking that, are they? And you get into this with White Rabbits time and time again. They want to fight the ghost of Lincoln past. Well, you got to worry about the ghost of Lincoln present, because he's backed by Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters. You got the Pink Rabbits right in front of you. Don't worry about the ghost of the past, the Polish president that just died in the plane crash. You want to fight the ghost of Hitler past, and nationalists always do. The Irish Rabbits, they want to fight the ghost of Cromwell past. The Russians, some of the Russians want to fight the ghost of Hitler past. Some of the Eastern Europeans want to fight the ghost of Hitler past. The ghost of the past is not around. You've got to know your enemy, because your enemy's still there. His MO is still in place. His modus operandi, he is still there. He's making his moves. He's in a lot of trouble. His timetable is thrown off, but he is there. No less. And not to recognize your enemy for what it is, and that's basically rabbits that look like you, that have no loyalty to you. And in America, it's hard not to come across the talking head that isn't a Jew rabbit normally, but it's going to go a little deeper than that. But you pretty much should know your enemy by now. You should know his tactics. To not do that, to repeat the mistakes of your ancestors, or to repeat the mistakes of the past, doesn't do anyone's ancestors any good. Because yesterday's enemy is today's family member. It doesn't make any sense. I got all kinds of land. Yeah, I got all kinds of land to allow anything you want. We just don't have a home. And there's an agenda. And the agenda is white rabbit genocide. And they can take you right and they can take you left. But for them to survive, we have to go. I don't know the full score, but it's just the way it is, obviously. They're not interested in attacking your culture. But a lot of times you get in these huge debates over these symbols. And I was in one, and a friend of mine had a German flag from World War II, a German naval flag. And it was obviously National Socialist. And anything National Socialist or German World War II or anything having to do with Hitler or World War II is always taboo. It's always implicitly white. And they attacked it. For one reason or another, there was no historical debate going on. You know, most of the German Navy were not party members, and that was a problem for the party. They weren't Nazi party members. There were many Nazi party members were actually in the minority, but they weren't having any rational debates about it. We see this time and time again. I've seen it my whole entire life. All they were doing is attacking it for being implicitly white. So I said, in your opinion, the German flag is racist. You're just saying that because they're white. Anti-German is just a code word for anti-white. And they said, well, they're attacking it because it was associated with Nazis. I said, in your opinion, you know, I kept on doing it over and over again. Oh, they got upset. You know, obviously you could be anti-Nazi and not be anti-white, but, you know, they're not interested in rational debate. They're basically in some type of trance, basically repeating what mommy professor told them to repeat about those symbols. And you break that by smacking them on the nose and with repetition. It's like correcting any child. But anytime someone starts debating anything that's implicitly white, it goes off the, I don't debate it. I make my point, and I make it over and over again. They're not talking about, there's nothing, no rational discussion going on. And the people that they present to us as some big heroes in America, like the Lincolns, are monsters. They're monsters because the people they take money from are monsters. The people that, whoever he was doing business with, if that's the second coming of the Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters, and he did something wrong. You know, and getting, if you want to get rid of Africans, and they did for most listeners, the country of Liberia, I believe it's Liberia, they were going to send African slaves back there after the war, and there's all these big plans drawn up. And I don't doubt that Lincoln may have been considering that, because he was shot in the head. Yeah, they had long-term plans for black rabbits in America. But if your game is ethnic conflict, well, you've got to stoke ethnic conflict. If it's not going to be there long-term between the North and the South, and there's really no ethnic conflict there because they're all related anymore, and they all have relatives this place or relatives that place or relatives in Virginia, so on and so forth, well, then you're going to have to stoke it between black rabbits. And if that fails or if that's getting too out of hand, well, then you bring in the Mexicans. You get the picture. The first rule is know your enemy. If you don't know your enemy, you end up in a worse situation than your ancestors. So they were going to allow succession. They just weren't going to allow a home. That's their game. That's their MO. And a lot of Southerners would be wonderful. We get succession. Oh, that's okay. We can deal with the Black Rabbits. No, you can't. You can't under a democracy because they will outbreed you. And then, of course, it would be Boer Farmer Redux Revisited. We'd have white rabbits being murdered in the South any more than they're already being murdered. It's one thing to have them attack your culture and you can move around. But once they pin you down like that and you can't go anywhere, well, then it's easy pickings. But in speaking of America, I'm going to come back and we're going to move over to another subject. But don't get caught in the ghost of Lincoln past. Get caught in the ghost of Lincoln present. Because they're just traitors. I'm sorry, they're just traitors. That may be controversial, but he's a traitor. If you go to war for my enemy, if you take money from them or you take some position of power, you can never be anything but a traitor. And if you go against their agenda, well, that's how they own all traitors forever. So I don't trust the Lincolns. I don't trust them because anytime I see the MO of destruction, war, destruction, reconstruction, consolidation of power, it's not the Russians. It's just not the Russians. It's Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters, and they've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's just now their plan over the last post-World War II has become, it's become pretty much in your face. It's become pretty obvious. They ain't hiding nothing anymore. But in the next little piece, I'm going to go over, I'm going to talk about the American Indians. I'm going to talk about some American falsehoods. I'm going to tell you the greatest thing about America. The greatest thing America did for the white world. And I'll be back with you in a second. So in closing again for Confederate History Month, fighting the ghost of Cromwell past or the ghost of Lincoln past, the ghost of Yankee past, will not win you anything except death from another angle. They'll give you that all day long because they do ethnic conflict. It's what they do. So don't fall for that, even if there are legitimate bitter memories, even if you should be able to write your own history. Actually, I think the whole thing should be rewritten. Even if it was a war on aggression, and it was pretty aggressive. It was a very aggressive war. If you want to go after slaves, if Horace the Avenger is talking about going after slaves, you're going to know it. And there's not going to be any disagreement. It's going to be pretty much obvious. Because that's the way the game is played. But don't fall for any of that nonsense. And they do this all the time. They rewrite all kinds of history, and they do nothing but historical revisionism. That's why I don't have a problem with historical revisionism, because I don't think white people do enough of it. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe don't do enough historical revisionism. But in this particular piece, I'm going to talk about America. I'm going to talk about the Indian rabbits. And the Indian rabbits, there's been a lot of things said about the Indian rabbits and how white people were always so, white rabbits were always so evil to them and everything else. And I'm going to read two stories. Neither one I've written. One was written by old Bob called The Trail of Tears. Another one called The Short Sale of Manhattan. It's about how the Indians got a great deal by selling Manhattan. And I'm going to start reading this. The Trail of Tears, April 13th, 2010, is by Bob. One item of the endless list of white man's evils is the Trail of Tears. That was when the poor Cherokees were routed off their land suddenly and had to walk to Oklahoma from North Carolina without preparation and died like flies. I've read the real story a few times, and you are welcome to correct me from Google. The Cherokees elected a big chief to deal with Washington, who was a large slaveholder with an Indian grandmother whose portrait looks as white as George Washington's. When the U.S. government ordered Indians off their land by a set date, the big chief told the Indians he would take care of it. When the day came, the federal troops routed them out, and sent them on their way. The big chief, like a modern liberal, yelled and stayed on his plantation. As the date approached, a lot of whites saw what was happening and collected money for the Indians to have transportation and food for the trip. They gave the money to the lower chiefs, and the lower chiefs stole it. So the people starved, and the chiefs took the money, and my race, the white race, got the blame. Just think of the Indians as a third world poor, and you see the pattern repeated endlessly in the 20th century. No one caught on to the real example of the Trail of Tears, and tens of millions died because of it. It's a fascinating piece, but that's another great example of how little we know of the truth, of what actually happened. The next one I'm going to read to you is pretty funny. It's about the short sale of Manhattan, and this comes from the book The Lore and Legends of Wall Street, Robert M. Sharp, And it was written in 1989. And it talks about some of the history of Wall Street. And one of the most famous examples is the examples of the Indians selling Manhattan. You know, the white man stole Manhattan from Indians or bought it for nickels on a dime. Well, I want to read you this piece about American history, about what really happened. And I think it goes what happened to the Indians, the truth behind the Indians goes hand in hand, and what really happens behind what really happens behind these wars, and the type of hurt feelings that it leaves over, and how it's exploited through ethnic conflict. And it's in chapter 6 of the book, and it's only 2 pages. It's called The Short Sale of Manhattan. And basically, it is what really happened. They're calling it a short sale because a short sale is selling something you don't own. And I'll start reading this, and it's a very short piece. In the spring of 1621, while the Pilgrims were building their first permanent houses at Plymouth Plantation, the Constitution of the Dutch West India Company was being approved at The Hague. The charter called for exclusive trade on the coast of America and Africa. Subscription of stock began immediately. 7 million guilders were collected by September 1623. By 1624, the company was functioning with a colony at Fort Orange, which is Albany, New York, and 8 men on Manhattan. The first colonization of Manhattan came the next year, and Peter Minuit was the first director general in 1626. Minuit was an honest man and a capable administrator. During his tenure, the 300 citizens trebled their exports, while Minuit dealt fairly and peacefully with the Indians. Minuit built Fort Amsterdam near the present-day Bowling Green, and then he negotiated the purchase of Manhattan Island. There is some doubt about the Indians that showed up to conduct the sale being the rightful owners of Manhattan. In fact, there is doubt that any Indians resided on the island at the time. If these doubts were true, the Indians sold something they didn't own to an out-of-towner, much as other natives would do with the Brooklyn Bridge 300 years later. The agreed purchase price was 60 guilders in beads and trinkets at the time when the guilder was considered to be worth 40 pence, thus the figure of 24 that made the history books, $24 that is. Now, the general opinion is that Minuit got the best deal, particularly when you consider that the entire 22 square miles for $24 could be compared to $622.29 per square foot paid 3 centuries later for the corner of Nassau and Wall. But let's consider what over 300 years does to money before jumping to conclusions. First, let's set the record straight on the demeaning phrase, beads and trinkets. Beads made from clam and snail shells had served as money among the Indian tribes for nearly a century before the white man's arrival. It had limited sources, required a constant amount of labor to produce, was difficult to counterfeit, and in general served as a stable currency for trading between whites and Indians. It stayed in use for nearly 2 centuries after the whites had arrived in America. Basically, what he's saying is those beads and trinkets were currency, and they were extremely valuable. They were basically another form of currency, a very stable currency, and wampum was. It's called wampum, those beads. Next, let's look at 60 guilders or $24 and see if the Indians had made a good deal or a bad deal. One way to begin is to consider the investments available. Holland had a perpetual government bond that paid 8% annually at the time. Perpetual means that it had no maturity date, no redemption, and continues to pay 8% indefinitely. There are a few of these still in circulation today. And I'll interject, those are very, very valuable bonds if you can find one. If we could continue to reinvest the interest at the same 8% rate and allow the investment to compound 363 years, 1626 to 1989 when this was written, then the 24 would have turned into, it looks like, $122,196,000,000,000. That means that the Indians would have bankrupted Holland some time ago and now could cover their short position by repurchasing Manhattan Island with 363 years of improvements. Not a bad deal. Had the Indians sent smoke signals to the Amsterdam Stock Exchange, which opened for business in 1602, to pick up some perpetual bonds, or better still, bought 60 guilders worth of Dutch East India stock, they would have received dividends averaging 18% until 1632, and then a fixed yield of 12.5% until the company was dissolved in 1799. By 1799, the investment would be worth $58 trillion. Or is it 58 billion dollars, 360 million, $100,000. A lot of money. It was 58 billion plus. And there's so many zeros in this, it's hard to read. And any further investment at 4% or better compounded quarterly would beat the perpetual bond. Either way, the Indians scalped, figuratively, the white man based on the future value of the $24 received. Selling rights to something you neither own nor use is an investor's dream. Other parcels were sold to Dutch patroons by other tribes along the Hudson River. There was never any lodging of any complaints by the Indians, nor any bragging by the Dutch. If there were grievances, the Indians compensated themselves from the settlers' livestock. All in all, a good business transaction for all parties involved. And it's a great piece. It tells you what really happened. It tells you something about the time value of money. When you hear $24, well, that doesn't mean anything. Because $24 in a day's money is a whole lot of money. The beads and trinkets was a whole lot of money. They bought it fair and square, and there was no complaints by the Indians. The Indians never came back and said they were ripped off. In fact, they wouldn't come back and say they were ripped off until late 20th century when liberals told them to. So it's all a bunch of nonsense. But that is the typical type of nonsense you get when it comes to American history, especially post-World War II. White Americans stole everything from the Indians. White Americans basically were contributing to try to help out the Cherokees as they were marched off to Oklahoma to go to their new home, or I guess you could say go on their way. And you could debate that one way or another, but the white rabbits were basically sitting there helping them, trying to give them money, and the little chiefs stole the money, and that's why they starved. We get this all the time. White rabbits are responsible for Africa. We give money to Africa, the evil African chiefs take it, steal it, and then we get blamed. But what's funny is white rabbits always buy into that, don't they? They never look deeper. Because when you look deeper in the Sale of Manhattan, when you look deeper into the Trail of Tears or something along those lines, whether it be Americans dealing with the American Indians, or when you deal with what happened to the Southerners and the Southern white rabbits in the American Revolution or the American Civil War, you get the current policy, you get the status quo, and the status quo is usually a bunch of bunk. It's a bunch of half-truth and innuendo. So sure, they bought Manhattan for $24, but let's sit down and figure out how much money that is. It's a lot of money in today's dollars. A lot of money. So all this nonsense is just that. It's nonsense. And the only people that believe it, the only people crazy enough to believe white rabbits would actually rip someone off are white rabbits. Yeah, the only people crazy enough to believe a tyrant that goes to war, doesn't allow states to succeed, goes to war over low-cost labor, but doesn't actually kill the low-cost labor, are white rabbits. Yeah. If you're going to war over low-cost labor, the first thing you do is get rid of them by any means necessary. 2% of the plantation owners ain't going to be fighting. And the average poor white rabbit might scratch their head and say, well, the only thing they're shooting are blacks. Black rabbits or whatever. It's a bunch of nonsense. But it leads to bitter memories. You have the Indians walking around talking about this stuff, getting themselves all worked up. Just like you have Southern rabbits with, I will have family members that lost property. I've already told you this. That lost actual property. That still have bitter feelings about being ripped off. But most people these days can be rational enough not to be stoked into something stupid. But the enemy would always be based on ethnic conflict, and they are always based on taking something from the past out of context and not talking about it rationally, but letting emotions fly, and then basically controlling the energy flow. That's how they operate. But those are two great examples of American history and the Indians. And the Indian rabbits. But I'll be back with you, and I'll tell you about the greatest thing America ever did for the white world. And that has to do with something in the Constitution, this little Congress shall make no laws stuff. And we'll be back, and I'll talk about this. People are always asking me, as an American, what's the most radical thing the country's ever done? What's the most significant thing? And the answer is really simple. It has to do with a little sentence in the Constitution, the First Amendment, the freedom of religion and press. the freedom of speech that the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, prohibiting free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of people to peaceful assembly. Congress shall make no law and abridging the freedom of speech. That was done, I believe it was ratified 1791, 15th of December 1791, is extremely radical in the history of the world. It is the most radical thing ever done. Because you're not giving anyone the right to free speech. That's a myth. You're extending a privilege that can't be revoked by the government by any law, period. It's extremely radical. They're not saying you have the right to free speech. They're saying Congress shall make no law abridging, taking freedom of speech away. That is a radical different maneuver in world history. There is no precedence for that in world history. If it was a right, it'd be taken away a long time ago. You see, you could take away gun privileges, gun rights. You can take away anything if you can regulate speech. Once you regulate speech, it becomes only a matter of time before you can start making inroads on guns and everything else. In America, they got around this freedom of speech by controlling a big oligarch, which kind of still does in many ways, controlled the major media, the newspapers, and then they controlled the radio, and then the television. They consolidated those powers. And by controlling and regulating that, and the textbooks and the publishing companies, well, they could regulate free speech indirectly for a while. And of course, by doing that, they could make inroads against guns. Most of the libertarians in America and some of the conservative elements will rightfully say that there should be no gun laws. That's true. But if you can regulate speech in any way, if you can control the dialogue, if you can control this energy flow in regards to gun rights or gun safety, if you can sit and lie, in other words, and get away with it, well, you can eventually make inroads on gun rights and get all kinds of gun laws going, and that's what they had going. The problem has always been for this New World Order crew as they set up in America, this Congress shall make no law business in regards to free speech. It is radical. There is no precedence for it in the history of the world. The Founding Fathers knew a little bit about their enemy. Most people assume the Founding Fathers, the enemy, would necessarily be the English. Not necessarily. They were against Pink Rabbit banksters and leasters. They think that we were against parts of Germany and parts of Europe. Well, again, the Pink Rabbit banksters and leasters will move around. They'll move to China, just like the Jew rabbits. Yeah, they're a little front group. They move around. Those little Pink Rabbits move around. It's their job. They get kicked out. They move. They lose a country. They move. They were in Russia. They got kicked out. They moved. You know, but they move around, so you've got to keep your eye on them and understand their tactics. But when they roosted in America, the Second Coming post-Civil War, as they started coming in prior to especially the big Federal Reserve Act, this has always caused a problem. Decade after decade, this is what they worried about the most, is Congress shall make no law business regarding free speech. How do you get around that? Well, you got to throw out the Constitution, and they got lazy. They got lazy by controlling the media. They controlled the media. But controlling white rabbits is always problematic. They've never been able to control us for any length of time. If they have a supernatural God here, well, he still can't control us for any length of time. We are problematic because we do the unthinkable. And so Billy Clinton has always talked about this. The Clintons, since Bill Clinton first came on the scene, he's talked about this hate speech, and that's how they gear everything in modern language. They want to abridge free speech. They want to control free speech vis-a-vis, you know, hate speech laws, and everyone knows about this. In America, that's problematic, because Congress shall make no laws. It means just that. It's difficult to get around in regards to speech. It's damn near impossible. And this has always been their problem, decade in, decade out. They worried about it. But this came to head in 1995. And Bill Clinton was in office. And this internet thing got out and running. It got out and running. And since then, they've kind of been at a slow-moving panic. Post-2000, maybe post-2000, 2001, since they realized how revolutionary it really could be, they've been really panicking, trying to get back control of it, especially vis-a-vis the little Jew rabbits, the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, and whatnot. They've all been out and out coming after the internet, but they can't figure out how to do it because that Congress shall make no law nonsense. The Founding Fathers were a lot more radical. In fact, again, it's the most radical thing done in the history of the world. Giving someone a privilege that can never be revoked. Inversely, you know, Congress shall make no law. Forget about giving them rights. Just Congress shall make no law to tamper with free speech. It's just impossible to get around. You know, it's impossible. They've said that you pretty much got to throw out the Constitution. But Bill Clinton of late has been giving he's been giving interviews, and he's talking, on the Rush Limbaugh show, or Rush Limbaugh's talking to about this, and I don't know if he was on there, but I got the transcript. And either Rush is playing him or Rush is on there. It's called Bill Clinton Links Talk Radio Tea Parties and Non-Existent Terrorism. And you've heard this. He's trying to say that if there's another terror event, it's because of Waco. It's a bunch of stuff. Even if it's a bunch of nonsense. Even if a bunch of Waco, I'm sorry, a bunch of Oklahoma City, another Oklahoma City bombing. What the Glenn Becks, even the Glenn Becks on Fox News are saying that Clinton's trying to link this stuff to tea parties, free speech to tea parties, to make an end run around free speech, labeling everything the Tea Parties talk about as hate speech and all that other kind of stuff, like they did in Canada. You know, Canada has total free speech control. But America's always caused a problem for them, that one little law. And that one little law is not a big deal if you have a press if you have a cartel controlling the media, if you have an oligarchy controlling the media. But it is a problem if free speech actually becomes a free speech. You see, prior to 1995, it was always an issue on the back burner. It would come up when, you know, free speech could be a problem, but they were never really worried about it. Post-1995, Americans and anyone that can speak or read English actually got free speech. The Internet, you actually have free speech in America. You don't have it at work. You don't have it necessarily at the local level. You can't say anything you want. That's an illusion. But on the Internet, you actually have free speech in English in America. That's radical, especially to these tyrants. They don't like that. So post-1995, this has become a bigger and bigger problem. And as it moved on from 1995, it has become a pain. Because free speech was not a problem when they controlled the press. Free speech was not a problem when they controlled the TVs, when they controlled the publishing companies. Free speech becomes a problem when you actually have free speech. And this has become comedy to watch them panic over this stuff. And I'll read for you what Clinton said just recently. When I became president, it's hard to remember this. There were only 50 sites on the World Wide Web. Among those who first saw its potential and made use of it were those who used the Internet to do all kinds of interesting things, including share information on how to make bombs. We didn't have blog sites back then, so the instrument of carrying this forward was basically the right-wing political talk show host. They understood that emotion was more powerful than reason. They got much bigger listening ship and more advertising and more commercial success if they kept people in the white heat. For 99% of them, it was just that. Turn on the radio, listen to someone say something you agree with, vent your anger. And he was talking about how the Internet has fueled all these different growths of gun rights groups. Post 1995, it's been very difficult to get all these big gun initiatives. It's been increasingly difficult as the Internet has went on, as people started questioning things, as demoralization starts being neutralized. It's more difficult. In fact, there's been more pro-gun measures passed since 1995 than I don't know when. They pass them all the time. People are much more informed. Every day that goes by, once speech becomes free, once this internet came online, every day that went by becomes another day closer to freedom, because you're neutralizing all that programming. You know, true information is now coming through. The NRA actually has a legislative site. All these different other sub-gun groups have their different legislation sites, and they are extremely active and extremely wealthy. Not that they weren't active before, but the Internet is an equalizer. You know, all the different hunting groups in America, they all have their own websites. All the different white rabbit groups, we have our own websites. We have our own media channels. So free speech wasn't ever a problem for the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters, because they just controlled the medium. But once the medium became the Internet, well, free speech became actually free speech in a way no one in the world, in the history of the world, has ever seen it. It was the Constitution of the 1799 or whatever date I just gave you, the actual U.S. Constitution, meeting true technology that could deliver true free speech. And of course, they don't want that. You know, I'm sorry, it's 1791. They don't want free speech. So it was 1791 meets 1995, the most radical law in the history of the world. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, meets a medium, the Internet, that can deliver free speech. And so if you could read English, if you could type English, you have free speech if you have the internet. Most Western countries had the internet pretty quickly. Russia had it even quickly. Germany, they had it quickly. And of course, we own the net. So this has been funny, and Bill Clinton has talked about this. He said this was small when he took office, and this should be controlled. Of course it should. But not to us, it shouldn't. But you see, this Constitution is a problem. This Constitution is a problem. And as an American, I'm quite proud of that. In 1791, if you can stone your enemies in 1995, you're doing pretty good because the enemy didn't go away. It's the same enemy, believe it or not. The same exact party. In fact, the parties are even related. You're gonna have Pink Rabbit banksters and Pink Rabbit elitesters in power in the South right now that are related to certain parties that pulled their games way back when. Yeah, these families are very, very interconnected. They're all related, just like we're all related. But I think it's funny that free speech really bothers them. I mean, Clinton's going really out on a limb saying that the bombing of Oklahoma City is tied to free speech and all that kind of stuff like that. What we learned from Oklahoma City is, I'll quote him, is not that we should gag each other or that we should reduce our passion for positions we hold, but the words we use really do matter because there's this vast echo chamber and they go across space and they fall on Sirius and the delirious alike. They fall on the connected and the unhinged alike. I like that. They go across space and they fall on the serious and delirious alike because there's this vast echo chamber. It does. It starts with a sound. It starts with a vibration and then it starts pounding through the system. And once it starts, it cannot be stopped. I guess you could try to shut down free speech. Good luck. Good luck because certain parties in high positions want it there. Well, we're talking about things useful. But this 1791 law, this radical law, met true free speech for the first time in the history of the world in a way that was totally democratic. And I think the internet is very democratic for white rabbits because the average white rabbit can get them a website or at least a blog and talk about what the hell they want to talk about. I don't know anything more democratic than that. And they can use whatever language they want within reason. I mean, if you're willing to pay a little bit more money for a server, you can use whatever language you want. But it is absolutely comedy. And of course, the only thing bigger than the white nationalist sites are the full-blown conspiracy rabbit sites. And they get upset when I call it conspiracy rabbit sites. I don't know what else to call the rinse.com, but when you have the top 1,600 websites in the world, when you're on the top 1,600 websites in the world, you're obviously getting a lot more readers than just the paranoid schizophrenic. You know, that's how this conspiracy stuff was always, I had always thought of it as just these paranoid, schizophrenic, crazy rabbits. Well, no, there's a lot of mainstream stuff that comes down those channels now, and there's a lot of mainstream listeners, a lot of Hollywood type listeners, people, in other words, that can repeat your message. And that stuff has become mainstream. I've got some pretty interesting listeners that most people would be surprised that they're out there listening, but you'd be surprised when you have that big of an audience, when you start reaching bigger and bigger audience, you'd be surprised who cruises these websites. But then again, don't we all? I mean, they have salacious headlines. Some of them are ridiculous, but some of them are pretty fascinating stuff. And it is comedy. And of course, I'll tell you my biggest complaint. Everyone says they know what's wrong with white rabbits, or they know what's wrong in America. You know, all the foreigners, the Europeans say, you know, there's a lot we don't like about America. And I'll be the first to tell you there's a lot I don't like about America. In fact, I know things about America that you don't know that would make you like it even less. But it doesn't matter. They still did something right in the middle of a dark age. Because in 2010, our enemy doesn't have their new world order, and we're still alive. And we not only are still alive, we have free speech, and we have a medium that can deliver it. So someone did something correctly, you know. But white rabbits, they tend to obey the law. Yeah, they obey the law even if it gets them killed. Every day I see some young kid, they're really good intentions and they're really good young white rabbits, and they want to join the service or join the military, and they want to be patriotic and they want to go serve their country. And I don't normally have a problem with that unless I think they're going off to die tomorrow in some crazy big war. That has nothing to do with the color of apples. For instance, if we were going to war for white rabbits, we'd all go to war, and there'd be no question on my part. But if you're going to war for some other reason, well, going to war for pink rabbits and banksters and elites, there's no way to go to war, but they always go. They, you know, they think it's the right thing to do, and there's really no telling them any different. You know, they always go to war, and that's back in the Civil War or any of these other wars. White rabbits like to obey the law, and if the law says we got to go to war against the enemy, well, that's what they do. You know, the Union says, look, we're going to have a Union draft, and we're going to go, and we Yankees are going to whip the Southern rabbits. And of course, the Southern rabbits say we got to defend our home and we got to fight. And of course, they obey their elites, and we obey these elites. And then the next thing you know, you have a war. And sometimes you have a choice. Sometimes there is no choice. I don't know. You know, if you were in the South prior to Civil War, you're going to go to war to defend your, to defend what you think of as your home, even if you didn't own any slaves, and most of them didn't. Only, you know, 98% didn't, but it's just the way the world works, and white rabbits always obey the damn law. But in the American Civil War, they had all these Irish rabbits arrive in New York, and the Irish rabbits didn't much like them handing them a rifle coming off the boat. So they handed them these Irish rabbits rifles off the boat to go kill Southern rabbits. And they weren't really happy with that, so they start burning down New York. Every once in a while, white rabbits stop obeying the law, and it becomes rather entertaining. And white rabbits are probably the most destructive rabbit on earth when they want to be. But those Irish rabbits had the right ideal. If someone hands you a gun and tells you to go kill a bunch of white rabbits, well, burning down New York seems a pretty logical thing to do. So the hat goes off to those white rabbit immigrants in prior to the Civil War, those Irish rabbits they wanted that arrived in New York, and they say, here's a gun, you're going to go fight for the Union. And they had those big draft riots, and they were violent. I don't think there's been enough historical revision on those. I mean, I don't think the truth of those has come out. You know, everyone always likes to, white rabbits always like to be Johnny on the spot and engage in what would happen if, what would happen if the South would have engaged in forget one-on-one combat, like that stand-up combat. What would happen if they engaged in outright terrorism? Well, they would have won. Because all you have to do is keep provoking those draft riots. You had all kinds of new citizens that weren't interested in going to war, and you had all kinds of, only a handful of elites in the North really wanted war. You know, it was a bunch of nonsense, as usual. How many elites in America wanted war with Iraq? I mean, come on now. Again, all you have is a bunch of white rabbits obeying the law. But those Irish rabbits killed me reading about these draft riots. And the draft riots in New York were extremely violent. They knew that they were going to war for a bunch of nonsense. They knew the score very well. And it probably reminded them too close to some nonsense going on in the British Isles. But they had it right. They had it right, but that's the biggest complaint I have about white rabbits. They're so damn law-abiding. They'd be the easiest group in the world to govern. They don't do anything wrong. As long as they're getting their pizzas on time, they're okay. They're very happy and content. You know, don't tax them too much. Don't rape and murder them too much. Don't send them to war too much. But those Irish rabbits, they had the right idea. Now, I don't know if they got off the boat and they were a little upset. I don't know if they were just coming out of a rough ride from the British Isles. They had a very rough time there, for a long time prior. Probably a combination thereof, but they pretty much burned down New York. And there's another incident. So that is my biggest complaint. But by all means, if you're listening to this 10,000 years from now and some crazy politician tries to get you to run off and shoot another white rabbit in some silly war, you might want to look up the draft riots in New York. They would have proved very effective on a wide scale if someone would have really went up there, an agent provocateur, and really got those going. But, you know, the South, they did things like white rabbits tend to do. They're too nice. But this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit, we'll continue this discussion on the next MP3. This one's went a little bit longer because I put basically two episodes together. We reformatted things with a new theme song and whatnot. But I'll be back with you with another episode shortly. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all, as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the Indigenous White Rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.